Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
There is a shutdown, and that is taking place on the 21st. I don't really know what it means. I'm not sure anybody actually knows what it means, but we wanted to try and understand a little bit more about it, and if it's a smart time to do it, given the fact that there will be the G20 happening. Gabriel Krause is writer, analyst at the Institute of Race Relations. Gabriel, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well.
How's it, Howard? Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can you just give us a bit of an overview, just talk to us about the shutdown?
So it has been planned by a group that intends to draw attention to domestic violence, particularly gender-based violence against women. They said something to the effect of, as long as a woman is buried in South Africa every 2.5 hours, the G20 summit cannot talk about progress. And their particular call is for gender-based violence in South Africa to be categorized as a sort of special class of crime that gets heightened police function and resources allocated to addressing it.
Okay, so it's not government endorsed. It's quite specific in terms of protesters, right?
Yeah, it's a civil society thing. I mean, I think that a cynic would say, and perhaps with some reason, that on the one side you've got a lot of news in relation to G20 coming from the Trump administration in the US. He did make a false white genocide claim. Mm-hmm. He's also drawn attention to some true things and has said that he's going to, you know, and the sort of local call from Solidarity and other groups here is for farm murders to be classified as a high priority crime. And so one of the sort of talking points, I think it's fair to say, in South African media spaces, it's like, well, okay, it's true that rhino poaching and crime in the Cape Flats, that has been classed as high priority. But if you're going to put something next in line as high priority, it should be gender-based violence, not farm attacks. And so I think this protest in a way is part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So it's such a confusing one, because it's obviously a vital, a very relevant issue. We had this discussion the other day on here in studio, and I was saying, well, I feel like this whole turning my profile purple is performative. There's a real issue in South Africa. We are 5 or 6 times the global average when it comes to gender-based violence. We have a crisis, but is that going to make is making my profile picture purple going to make a difference? Is disrupting the G20 and potentially embarrassing government going to make a difference? Is it going to make a difference if it's a failure and people don't stay away, which I believe they won't? It's such a difficult one to navigate.
Yeah, I think you're drawing attention to the difference between someone who wants to look like and someone who really cares. And a crucial part of that difference is the latter is going to think carefully about not merely how they appear, but what the real world impact is going to be of their intervention. It doesn't seem very likely to me that there's going to be good real world impact out of this. I think it's quite likely that this is going to be a damn script, that there's not going to be a lot of buy-in. And I think that has a negative effect. You know, then it does make the issues in a way seem more trivial, and it is a very serious issue. But I think that, on the other hand, adding to the disruption, Joburg's going to be very hard to navigate already. Yes. I lived in New York when the United Nations in Murray Hill, close to where the UN, you know, it's like cities take strain. It's a great time, you know, these huge delegations come through. It's a good time to try and do business. One of the things probably that would help gender-based violence is, you know, economic boosting through attracting gross fixed capital formation, which is right. part of what the G20 thing should be about. So you don't want to get too much in the way of that. But look, I mean, I will say one thing about shutdowns that I think listeners should recall. In March 2023, the EFF promised a shutdown. That shutdown in turn was shut down. Of course, it was different. They wanted to do a very violent-looking thing. Mm. There were 50,000 tires that had been on the side of the road ready to be burnt and whatever. But what was important there is that it showed the government can get its act together. They actually, you know, they've stopped those buses from moving around. They got those tires off the streets. I think there is something we should focus on, which is the police doing their job. If the police do their job, if they get the evidence, if the DNA testing kits are properly filed, if the centers are properly staffed and funded to actually process that evidence, if the witness protection programs are working properly, if the NPA is working properly, like, there is a system in civilization that's been worked out over a couple of thousand years to deal with violent crime. And we have the system in place broadly. We need to apply attention to making that system operate efficiently. I think that's the way to go forward.
What's fascinating, though, is if we zoom out a little bit on this, we've seen the solidarity thing about their posters. We're seeing this. This to me, potentially. Possibly indicates an enormous amount of frustration that South Africans are having with getting government to listen. And there seems to be this idea that, well, you're not listening, now we're going to talk about it internationally and potentially embarrass you, and then maybe you'll listen. Give me your reaction or your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so Solidarity's billboard that said South Africa is the most race-regulated country in the world. I think they might have gotten that line from me. I gave an interview with them about a month ago.
Wow.
And I used that, exact phrase.
Yes. Oh, really?
It's a correct analysis, in my opinion.
Okay, I want to come back to that because I want to hear that, right? But carry on with your thought first.
So, you know, I think if you go back to the Durban, you can go back to when the United Nations was being formed just after World War II. There was a very similar dynamic. South Africans were very frustrated with the government that they had, and it seemed to many that the only way you could get real attention was by going to Jan Smuts when he's prancing around on the world stage and saying, okay, look, buddy, you're getting a lot of likes out there, but what about back home, the people that you're actually supposed to be serving? I think that pattern is returning, and I think it's for similar reasons. There have been such deep failures for the government to get it right that people are a little bit fed up with trying to use the usual channels.
So that being the case, now come back to, because I thought it was hyperbolic. I didn't think that was an accurate statement. Take me through it now.
So if you look at the Barnard Principle, and the documentary that I was interviewed for included that, that says that you can refuse to promote or hire someone, even if they're by far the best candidate for the job. That's a quote from the court. And you can prefer to keep their position vacant. So an empty chair is preferable to someone from the wrong race. That has been the law in South Africa at least since 2014. In the public sector, that the Constitutional Court has said that can be used against white men, white women, black men, black women, anyone from any one of those eight race gender pairs. And as of September 1st, 2025, the regulations changed to say that is now applicable to 7.5 million workers in the private sector too. So that means we now have the world's only system that is trying to get every single workforce in the country. This is by law, this is what the law says, all levels of all workplaces must have demographic representation, and if you have overrepresentation, you can apply the Barnard Principle. Now, I was at a conference in Sandton, the BEE Frank Dialogue, hosted by JJ Tabani, and I spoke about this, and three BEE consultants came to me afterwards. They said, you're right. One of them said to me, I can't say which company, we just had to tell them, you can only hire 500 white men at one of your salary levels, because you're overrepresented with black women, black men, Indians and coloreds, and even white women. So all you can do is hire white men. There's no other coward. There's no other country on earth that is trying to make every single business with 50 people or more have exactly equal demographic representation at all salary bands in the workforce.
Well, it's nonsensical, that's why. it doesn't make sense to do that, because it removes incentive, it removes so many things. It just doesn't
humanity.
Yeah.
It totally removes humanity and the notion of a worker as being someone whose primary relation to their workplace is collegial and about adding value. It turns everyone into some little jelly baby that's like one of eight flavors, and you're trying to make a recipe with, you know, the right amount of jelly babies. It's very dehumanizing. And you know, I'll add a bit of detail to this by saying, okay, court evidence that we found, IRO Legal, shows that the Barnard principle has been applied against black women, black men, Indian women, Indian men. Indians have it the hardest because they're the smallest. SAP said, we will only hire an Indian woman if there's 150 people at the salary band. Otherwise, the ideal target is zero, because you've got to round down. So, and there are now no zero.
Explain that. Sorry, explain that again to me.
So, Indian women, for example, were 0.6% of the population at the time.
Okay.
So, if you say we need to have a representative number of Indian women in the senior management level of SAPs, then you say, well, how many people are there at this level? There's 19 people that are senior managers in this business unit. So what is 0.6% of 19? It's 0.45. So that is such a small fraction that you round it down and you say, well, the ideal target. So an Indian woman, Janila Naidu, applied for a job to be a station commander. She got the best marks. The committee recommended her to, of the available candidates, they said she's the best. And then she was refused appointment because they said that would put us over representation. And then she said, but look, you don't even have a single Indian woman there. And they said, yes, that's ideal. The ideal number of Indian women is zero. And we want to keep it that way. And she took it to court, and she lost at the Supreme Court of Appeal. So there's no, Howard, there's no country in the 21st century.
This is insane.
In the 20th century, it
happened. This is Twilight Zone.
So I think Solidarity's poster, you know, people interpret it as like, welcome to the delegates.
Yes.
It should be welcome South Africans to the country that you don't even realize you're living in, to the world that's been pulled over your eyes. Like, this system has just been, it's been going in the public sector. Hardly anyone's been complaining about it. It's now come to the private sector, 7.5 million employees in big formal businesses. And, you know, as I said, these, like, you know, to be in a country where it's like only 500 white men can be hired in this salary band.
It's absolutely crazy. Gabriel, I do need to end. They are signaling me that we've gone way over time, but I was actually ignoring them as well here in studio because it was so fascinating. I would love to continue, but we do need to move on to another guest who is waiting. Gabriel Krause is a writer and analyst at the Institute of Race Relations.